Welcome back to 97.9 The Hill and Chapelboro.com's Halloween Spooktacular, presented by Wine and Design of Chapel Hill. Our next story of the evening may sound familiar, not only because it's set in a location about an hour from here, but also because it's a local twist on a bone-chilling classic.
Just an hour from Chapel Hill, near Greensboro and High Point, if you drive along the gentle twists and turns of Highway 70 for long enough, you'll find yourself in Guilford County, Jamestown specifically. The conditions have to be just right because the story is always the same. There's always darkness, there's always rain, there's always a girl, there's always the bridge. The locals call it Lydia's Bridge. She's wearing white in most of the stories, an evening dress. She's soaked and shivering in the rain, and as headlights sweep over her, she does her best to get your attention. Sometimes it's as simple as a meek wave. Sometimes she'll frantically flag drivers down. Sometimes you'll turn a corner and she'll be standing in the middle of the road, motionless, eyes glazed and staring, causing drivers to swerve and skid on the puddles and grooves so common of old roads. If you let Lydia into your car, she'll be mostly quiet. She'll ask you to please, please take her home. She's just come from a dance, or her car broke down. A boyfriend left her on the side of the road. Her name may be Lydia, Annie, Mary, or something else, but you'll know it's her. There's an air about Lydia, an aura. When you catch her looking at you in the rearview mirror, you make eye contact. You'll feel goosebumps run up your arms and down your back. As you ride together, you may notice that the usual swell of a breathing lung or beating heart is conspicuously absent from her, either in sound or motion. The thing is, the folks that give Lydia a lift don't always make it home themselves. Or, if they get to where Lydia asks them to go, they'll look back to see that she's vanished, leaving no trace that she was ever there at all. Not even a drop of rain on the back seat. Lydia and the bridge she haunts are part of a special piece of American folklore, the Phantom Hitchhiker. It's a story as old as transportation itself, with legends of ghosts hopping on buggies or horses seeking transportation to somewhere, anywhere else. It isn't always a woman either. There are stories of salesmen, saints, children, and all manner of mysterious figures drifting in the fog of lonesome roads on late nights. There was a time when cars were few on the road and that the death of a young woman in an automobile accident would have been a relative rarity. There may be some folk memories passed down through generations of some fatal accident long ago which shook an entire town, the death of a close friend or a daughter in a tight-knit community. And those memories are kept alive in the Phantom Hitchhiker stories. There also may be something in the way the story captures the muted feeling of isolation and tension found on the road in the wee hours. The fear of rain, darkness, the unknown of what headlights may fall upon in the mist. The journey from Raleigh to Greensboro feels like a short jaunt in the daylight hours, a pleasant and comfortable journey. But anyone who has traveled that distance alone and in the dead of night can attest that there's often more to the road than what can be seen. The radio can distract us, a phone call can comfort us, but there are feelings, passing thoughts, and something in the pit of your stomach as a person drives alone in the dark. Places have memories, after all, and not all memories are pleasant. For Lydia, the memory of a lonely death and a desperate afterlife endures under a bridge in Jamestown. A bridge that you should probably avoid, if you can.
For our final tale of the evening, we're going to continue the theme of a local twist on a classic tale. We hope you enjoy this special presentation of Edgar Allan Poe to complete our collection of spooky stories.
This is Aaron Keck with Brad Bednar, and tonight on Halloween, we present a dramatic reading of Edgar Allan Poe's classic, The Cask of Amontillado.
Hang on. Stop.
What?
97.9, The Hill.
Right.
Hyper-local,
right.
Halloween show. I don't know what Amontillado is. Like, is it the third character in the story?
No, I think it's like a liquor or something.
Oh, okay. Like Topo Spice Rum. But Something better.
Something like something more local.
Yeah, like something more local and more delicious.
Oh,
than
so
Tapo
like
spice
Tapo
rum.
Spiced
yeah,
so rum.
Akin
okay.
To Tapo spiced rum.
Gotcha. But better?
But better, yeah.
All right. The Cask of Tapo Spiced Rum, a dramatic reading of a story by Edgar Allan Poe. The thousand injuries of Fortunato I had borne as best I could, but when he ventured upon insult, I vowed revenge. You, who so well know the nature of my soul, will not suppose, however, that gave utterance to a threat. It must be understood that neither by word nor deed had I given Fortunato cause to doubt my goodwill.
Mm-mm.
I continued, as was my wont, to smile in his face, and he did not perceive that my smile now was at the thought of his immolation. He had a weak point, this Fortunato, and though in other regards he was a man to be respected and even feared.
Ooh, scary.
He prided himself on his connoisseurship in Tapo spiced rum.
Thank you.
Dusk one evening during the supreme madness of the carnival season, supreme March madness of the basketball season, that I encountered my friend.
Hey, how are you?
He accosted me with excessive warmth, for he had been drinking much.
Party.
The man wore motley, and his head was surmounted by the conical cap and bells. I was so pleased to see him that I thought I should never have done wringing his hand. I said to him, "My dear Fortunato, you are luckily met. How remarkably well you are looking today, but I have received a flask of what passes for a Tapo spiced rum, and I have my doubts."
How, brah? Tapo spiced rum? Impossible. And, like, in the middle of the carnival?
March Madness.
March Madness?
I have my doubts, I replied, and I was silly enough to pay the full Tapo spiced rum price without consulting you in the matter. You were not to be found, and I was fearful of losing a bargain.
What? Tapo spiced rum?
I have my doubts.
Tapo spiced rum?
And I must satisfy them.
Tapo spiced rum?
Yes. As you are engaged, I am on my way to Lucrezia. If anyone has a critical turn, it is he. He will tell me.
Bruh, Lucrezia can't tell Tapo spiced rum from Amontillado.
And yet some fools will have it that his taste is a match for your own.
Come on, let's go.
Whither?
To your vaults.
My friend, no. It is the severe cold with which I perceive you are afflicted. Hay fever, some spring thing. The vaults are insufferably damp. They are encrusted with nitre.
Let's just go, nevertheless. The cold's nothing.
Thus speaking, Fortunato possessed himself of my arm, and I suffered him to hurry me to my palazzo. I took from the sconces two flambeaux, and giving one to Fortunato, bowed him to the archway into the vaults. We passed down a long, winding staircase, and stood together upon the damp ground of the catacombs of the Montresors.
Montrosses?
Ooh, that's even better. The Montrosses. The gait of my friend was unsteady.
Whoa.
And the bells upon his cap jingled as he strode.
The Tapo spiced rum.
It is farther on, said I, but observe the white webwork which gleams from these cavern walls. He turned towards me and looked into my eyes with two filmy orbs that distilled the rheum of intoxication.
Nitre?
Nitre. And how long have you had that cough? This went on for a while.
That's nothing.
Come, we will go back. Your health is precious. You are rich, respected, admired, beloved. You are happy, as once I was.
Oh, stop.
We will go back. You will be ill, and I cannot be responsible. Besides, there is Lucrezi.
The cough's a mere nothing. It will not kill me. I shall not die of a cough.
That's true. But you should use all proper caution. A draught of this wine will defend us from the damps. Drink.
I drink to the buried that repose around us.
And I to your long life. He again took my arm and we proceeded.
Brah, these vaults are like killer extensive.
The Montrosses were a great and numerous family.
Like... I totally forget your arms.
A huge human foot crushing a serpent whose fangs are embedded in the heel.
And the motto?
Esse quam videre.
Good.
We passed through a range of low arches, descended, passed on, and descending again arrived at a deep crypt. At the most remote end of the crypt, there appeared another, less spacious. Three of its walls lined with human remains piled to the vault overhead. From the fourth side, the bones had been thrown down and lay promiscuously upon the earth, forming at one point a mound of some size. Within the wall, we perceived a steel interior crypt or recess. It was in vain that Fortunato, uplifting his dull torch, endeavored to pry into the depth of the recess. Its termination, the feeble light, did not enable us to see. "Proceed," I said. "Herein is the Topo spiced rum. As for Lucrece, I..."
"He's a bummer,"
interrupted my friend as he stepped unsteadily forward while I followed immediately at his heels. In an instant, he had reached the extremity of the niche, and finding his progress arrested by the rock, stood stupidly bewildered. A moment more and I had fettered him to the granite. In its surface were two iron staples.
Ow.
From one descended a short chain, from the other a padlock. Throwing the links about his waist, it was but the work of a few seconds to secure it. He was too much astounded to resist.
"Whoa, I can't resist."
Withdrawing the key, I stepped back from the recess. "Pass your hand," I said, "over this wall. You cannot help feeling the nitre."
"Dun, dun, dun."
"Indeed, it is very damp. Once more, let me implore you to return." "No? Then I must positively leave you. But I must first render you all the little attentions in my power."
"The Topo spiced rum."
"Yes," I replied. "The Topo spiced rum." As I said these words, I busied myself among the pile of bones. Throwing them aside, I soon uncovered a quantity of building stone and mortar. With these materials, and with the aid of a trowel, I began vigorously to wall up the entrance of the niche. I had scarcely laid the first tier when I discovered that Fortunato's intoxication had worn off. The earliest indication I had was a low, moaning cry from the depth of the recess. There was then a long and obstinate silence, and then I heard the furious vibrations of the chain. That went on for several minutes. When at last the clinking subsided, I resumed. The wall was now nearly upon a level with my breast. A succession of loud and shrill screams burst suddenly from the throat of the chained form. It seemed... It seemed to thrust me violently back. For a brief moment, I hesitated. I trembled, but the thought of an instant reassured me. I placed my hand upon the solid fabric of the catacombs and felt satisfied. I reapproached the wall. I replied to the yells of him who clamored. I re-echoed. I aided. I surpassed them in volume and in strength.
Up, up, up.
Ah!
Thank you.
I did this, and the clamorer grew still. It was now midnight, and my task was drawing to a close. There remained but a single stone to be fitted in. I struggled with its weight. I placed it partially in its position. But now there came from out the niche a low laugh that erected the hairs upon my head. It was succeeded by a sad voice, which I had difficulty in recognizing as that of Fortunato. The voice said,
"Oh, very good joke indeed. An excellent jest. We'll have many a rich laugh about it at the Palazzo over our rum."
"The Topo spiced rum," I said.
"Yes, the Topo spiced rum. But isn't it getting late? Won't they be awaiting us at the Palazzo, the Lady Fortunato and the rest? Let us be gone."
"Yes," I said. "Let us be gone."
"For the love of God, Montrose."
"Yes, for the love of God." But to these words I hearkened in vain for a reply. I grew impatient. I called aloud, "Fortunato!" No answer. I called again, "Fortunato!" No answer still. I thrust a torch through the remaining aperture and let it fall within. There came forth in return only a jingling of the bells.
Jingle, jingle.
My heart grew sick. It was the dampness of the catacombs that made it so. I hastened to make an end of my labor. I forced the last stone into its position and plastered it up. Against the new masonry, I re-erected the old rampart of bones. For the half of a century, no mortal has disturbed them. Go Heels.
Thank you for joining us for an evening of spooky stories, and thanks to all the writers and storytellers that contributed their time and voices to make it happen. Happy Halloween and happy haunting from everyone at 97.9 The Hill and Wine and Design of Chapel Hill. Something evil's lurking in the dark.